The Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, Episode 18. Pennsylvania is home to both the oldest gas station and the oldest golf course in the United States. Hello, travel nerds, and welcome to the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, the show that teaches you how to travel more while spending less. I'm Trav, the creator of Extra Pack of Peanuts, and with me today is no one, because for the first time in months, I am going to be doing a solo show. For the last 15 episodes, we've been fortunate enough to bring on some awesome travel experts. Really, people in the travel field that know their stuff. They've shared with you some amazing tips, their travel stories, their travel expertise. But now it's time for me to do a solo show. And of course, that means that I'll be talking about my expertise, which if you follow the blog or the podcast, you probably know is frequent flyer miles. And today, what I'm going to be discussing with you is the six biggest myths about frequent flyer miles. So if you are a frequent flyer mile veteran, you probably hear people saying these myths all the time around you when you tell them how you can travel around the world for almost free, and they give you this excuse or that excuse or that excuse about frequent flyer miles. So I'm going to give you the answers to their worries and concerns in this podcast. If you're a frequent flyer newbie, that's awesome too, because this is a lot of things that you're probably thinking about frequent flyer miles. And I know that I was thinking about frequent flyer miles when I first started in this hobby 2.5 years ago. So a lot of this comes out of my own feelings about what I was thinking 2.5 years ago, as well as a lot that I've heard from people who have come to the Extra Pack of Peanuts site or have been listening to the podcast when I start talking about frequent flyer miles. So let's dig into this now, the six biggest myths about frequent flyer miles. Myth number one. Frequent flyer miles can only be earned through flying. And veterans, to you, this notion seems ludicrous, but this is exactly what I thought for the first 28 years of my life, and the reason that I never started collecting them. I thought that these things called frequent flyer miles that I had heard about could only be earned through flying, and I never flew enough to make it worth it. So I thought, well, why am I even going to worry about frequent flyer miles? My uncle had collected a ton, but he was always traveling for business, and I wrongfully assumed that, okay, that is the way to earn miles is through flying, and I'm never going to earn enough to do anything with, so I never started collecting them. Wrong, wrong, wrong. So about 2.5 years ago, I wanted to travel more, a lot more. I didn't have a ton of money. I started reading up about frequent flyer miles again, and I realized flying is just one of the many ways that you can earn miles, and probably not the way that most people earn huge chunks of miles unless they are flying a lot for business. So ways that you can earn frequent flyer miles. Number one, the biggest way to earn frequent flyer miles in large chunks, especially for Americans, is through credit card signups. And you probably know that if you read any blogs and forums, but for the new people, you sign up for a credit card, you make a certain spend per month, and they give you a large signup bonus. This can be 40,000 miles, 50,000 miles. We saw bonuses as high as 100,000 miles a year, year and a half ago. So you get a large, large chunk of frequent flyer miles for signing up for a credit card. Then, of course, you can earn miles through spending on that credit card instead of using cash. So what I've done in the last 2 years is transition from always using cash to pay for things or a debit card to pay for things to just using my credit card to pay for things. Now, I don't go out and buy stuff I wouldn't buy anyway, and that's a whole nother podcast in its own right, but I just use my credit card to buy the things instead and then pay it off. Every time you're swiping your credit card, you're earning at least 1 mile for every dollar you spend. And if you're using certain credit cards, you may earn 2 or 3 miles or points for the dollars that you spend there. So it's a great way to rack up frequent flyer miles for doing nothing out of the ordinary. third way you can earn miles, online shopping. There are many online shopping portals that if you go through these online shopping portals, you can earn huge chunks of miles. For example, Sears might offer 15 points for every dollar that you spend if you shop online, where if you went to the store and used a credit card, you'd be earning 1 point. But if you go through their online shopping portal, then you might earn 15 points. So this is a really cool way to buy, especially big ticket items. I usually do this when I'm buying a computer or a TV. Or, for example, I bought my parents a hot air balloon trip through Groupon for Christmas 2 years ago. It's $300, but I was getting something like 30 points for every dollar I spent. So that $300 hot air balloon ride I bought them on Groupon actually got me 9,000 miles. So, you know, and that could be worth up to 90 or at minimum 90 dollars of value, could be worth up to $150, $200 of value if you use those points right. So online shopping is a very great and not hard way to do things. I don't ever do things that are really too difficult, and online shopping is not that difficult. I do it for my big ticket items to earn even more miles. You can also go to stores and buy gift cards with your credit card, and that will earn you points, and then you can use those gift cards later or hand them out to people. There are dining programs. You can sign your credit card up to a dining program, and every time you eat out at certain restaurants, you'll get bonus points. Now, I don't focus on this too much, meaning I don't go to certain restaurants just to get dining program points, but I will, every time I get a new credit card, I will tie it to United's dining program or American Airlines dining program, whichever miles I want to earn at that point. And then if I do happen to go to a restaurant that is part of a dining program, I wouldn't know it because I don't specifically go out to them, then I just earn these bonus points. So every once in a while, I have bonus points show up. It's really handy, too, if you're traveling a lot and you have no idea what restaurants that you're going to be going to. Sometimes those pop up and you earn bonus points for dining and you're not doing anything different except taking 3 minutes to tie your credit card to a dining program. There's also promotions that are released every so often. You might get targeted emails saying, you know, spend a certain amount on your credit card in a month and you'll get extra points, or, you know, fill out this survey for extra miles, stuff like that. Those are little tiny things, but they do add up over the course of time. They're usually pretty easy to do. And of course, the last way you can earn miles is through flying. But it's, as I've just mentioned, not just flying. But if you do fly, don't make the mistake that I made for 28 years. Make sure that you earn miles for that flight. So if you are paying for a flight, make sure you sign up for that airline's frequent flyer program and credit those miles to whatever airline you want then that's in that alliance, because you might as well get the miles if you are paying for a flight. So those are a ton of ways that you can earn frequent flyer miles. So myth number one, frequent flyer miles can only be earned through flying, is
wrong, sir. Wrong.
Frequent flyer myth number two. Every mile you earn means that is a mile you can fly. So as soon as I started learning about frequent flyer miles, when I gave up this idea that they can only be earned through flying and I started learning about them, I was ecstatic. I saw a credit card that was giving me 75,000 miles for signing up for it. And I thought, I can fly all around the world with this. I can fly 75,000 miles. That means I can go anywhere, and I could probably go anywhere twice. Well, turns out that is not exactly the case, or not the case really at all. In episode 2 of this podcast, we actually talked about zone-based award charts and distance-based award charts. So the thing you have to realize here is that 75,000 frequent flyer miles does not mean you can fly that amount of miles. It is tied to a certain amount. So for example, on zone-based award charts, most airlines will tell you that to fly domestic round trip within the U.S. or Canada, it's going to be 25,000 miles. So those 75,000 miles could have gotten me 3 domestic round trip tickets in the U.S. About 60,000 miles to go in economy class from North America to Europe for most airlines, 65,000 to go North America to Asia, about 80,000 to go North America to Australia and New Zealand. So Well, that's with zone-based award charts. So 75,000 miles, still a ton, but doesn't mean I can fly anywhere I want all over the world. So you want to be cognizant of the fact that the miles you earn aren't exactly the amount of miles you can fly, but that they're going to equate to a chart that then tells you where you can go. So the idea, the myth that every mile that you earn means that is a mile you can actually fly is...
Wrong, sir. Wrong.
Frequent flyer myth number three. Frequent flyer miles earn you a free ticket. While they can certainly get you a super cheap ticket, your ticket will never totally be free. And that's because of taxes and fees that are put on the tickets that airlines can't waive and can't control. Taxes for flying into certain airports, taxes for flying into certain countries, stuff like that. So you can end up getting a $2.50 ticket to Rio de Janeiro, just like I did for the World Cup next year, but it will never be $0. So you can get very, very, very cheap tickets. Like I said, $2.50 to fly to Rio, but you're never going to see an actual zero next to your name. Now, if you aren't careful, though, you can pay huge amounts while still using your frequent flyer miles if you don't use them properly. And this is because of a little thing called a fuel surcharge, which gets a little technical. But it's a tax that some airlines put on their award tickets, which are tickets that are booked with frequent flyer miles. So, for example, British Airways charges you between $400 and $600 per person just to fly between America and Europe, even if you're using your frequent flyer miles. Since you can usually get a paid ticket between New York and London for about that price or close to that price, you're really getting ripped off when you're using British Airway miles to buy a ticket with your miles, because you're actually paying a tax that is the fuel surcharge that is almost the same price as you would pay if you bought a ticket and didn't use your frequent flyer miles. That's why it's important to know what airlines charge a fuel surcharge and which ones don't. And in the show notes of this podcast, I will be linking to the 4-article series that I wrote about the fuel surcharge, explaining more about what it is, what airlines charge fuel surcharges, how you cannot have to pay that fuel surcharge by making sure you don't fly on those airlines and stuff like that. So if you're unsure about fuel surcharges, you'll definitely want to check that out, because that is something that a lot of people don't know about frequent flyer miles, and all of a sudden they book a ticket with frequent flyer miles and they're hit with this huge bill, and the lady on the other end says, all right, well, that'll be $600 per person, taxes and fees. And they're thinking, well, what the heck? Why did I even bother using frequent flyer miles? That's crazy. So you want to make sure you know about fuel surcharges, and you want to be able to get those cheap tickets like $2.50 to Rio and things like that. In order to be the most safe, and I do suggest this in the post, but I'll say it here again, I suggest earning as many miles as you can with United, since as of right now, October 2013, they do not charge a fuel surcharge on any ticket if you're using their miles. So this means you can fly on any airline in Star Alliance if you're using United's miles, and you're not going to get hit with that fuel surcharge. So you're not going to get hit with that $400 to $600 to Europe. It's going to be something closer to $100 or even less if you're using United miles. So to be safe, the easiest one I can recommend is earning miles with United, because you can use them on any flight that you find and you're not going to pay the fuel surcharge. So frequent flyer miles can earn you a completely free ticket is...
Wrong, sir. Wrong.
Frequent flyer myth number 4. Frequent flyer miles are hard to use. And I absolutely love hearing people tell me this, because all I have to do is point to myself and say, do you think I'm a genius? When they inevitably answer, of course not. I say, I went from knowing absolutely nothing about frequent flyer miles 2.5 years ago, nothing, to becoming an expert. And not everyone has to get to the level that I'm at. But my point is this. Yes, they're confusing to figure out at first. And although I'd argue that this is changing rapidly, with the amount of blogs out there on the subject and the great job they do explaining things for newbies, this argument is really going by the wayside pretty quick, because there's millions of blogs out there that make it a lot easier to learn about frequent flyer miles now than they did even when I started 2.5 years ago. I was instead on Flyer Talk, on the Flyer Talk forum, you know, reading stuff that sounded like it was a different language. It was a different language, not having any clue what I was reading for the first couple months until I kind of deciphered this new language. And then it really started to kick in. But now the blogs make it very easy for someone who doesn't know anything to come in and understand right away. And of course, the airlines want people to be confused by using frequent flyer miles, because if they are confused, they won't want to redeem them. And if they don't want to redeem them, the airlines don't lose any money because they don't pay for those seats that you're taking for basically free. All they do is gain your loyalty because they've given you these miles and points. You automatically feel a connection to them because they've given you something, even if you never use it. So they're gaining your loyalty in hopes that you never use what they gave them. And the simple fact is, 80% of people never even redeem their frequent flyer miles at all. So they're not even using the thing that they're getting. And that's why I'm here to help you learn about them. So in order to learn the basics and to get started and actually get yourself a trip on frequent flyer miles, I would say that it would only take you 4 to 5 hours. So 4 to 5 hours of quote unquote studying to be able to earn an almost free ticket anywhere in the world. I think that's a pretty good trade-off. And the thing is, most people might look into it for half an hour. They get these miles and they think, okay, now I'm going to use them. They look into it for a half hour. They see all this fine print. They get confused and they give up. I'm telling you, if you persevere, and when I say persevere, all it takes is really reading a blog. If you spend 4 to 5 hours of doing that, you will have enough knowledge to be able to know 80% of the stuff people do with frequent flyer miles, which will be enough for you to earn frequent flyer miles and then redeem them for a trip. Of course, the great thing about frequent flyer miles is that you can literally learn as much as you want. So I've spent the last 2.5 years, or almost 3, I guess, at this point, reading about frequent flyer miles every single day. And I'm constantly learning new things. I know people who have been in this game for 10, 15, 20 years, and they're constantly learning new things every day. And that's because it's always evolving. Airlines are changing their policies. Something opens up that wasn't there before. And that is the fun part of it. It's frustrating for many people, but I consider it the fun part because it means we're always looking for new advantages. And the end goal is we're always going to be traveling for almost free. So it's also great that you can figure out how you want to learn. So if you want to spend time poring over blogs and forums, you can teach yourself totally for free, and that's exactly what I did. However, if you're someone who values convenience, you could spend a small amount of money. You can pick up a copy of my Ultimate Guide to Frequent Flyer Miles for as low as $49, and right there in 65 pages, you're going to have all the frequent flyer knowledge that you need to form a very, very solid base to really then start continuing to learn a lot more. And if you really want a hands-on learning experience and to get to an expert level in just 1 month, there's always Frequent Flyer Bootcamp, which I offer for a limited amount of people every month or so to take them through hands-on, interactively, how you can actually do some really, really crazy stuff with frequent flyer miles. So it's a really amazing hobby. You can learn it for free. You can spend a little bit of money and have the convenience. But it's great because the end goal, as we said, is that you're going to get to travel to wherever you want. So no matter what way you decide to learn, you're always going to get to travel to wherever you want. So the idea that frequent flyer miles are hard to use, that myth is
wrong, sir. Wrong.
Frequent flyer myth number 5. It's impossible to ever find an available seat with your frequent flyer miles. So we just talked about people who spent half an hour maybe looking into frequent flyer miles and they've given up because it's too confusing. Now I want to talk about the people who have actually put some time in. And I hear this all the time from people who have given frequent flyer miles a legitimate shot once and then gotten discouraged because they weren't able to find a seat on the flight that they wanted. And then they've given up and their frequent flyer miles have eventually expired and they haven't gotten anything for their hard-earned frequent flyer miles. And the simple fact is, it isn't true. It isn't impossible to find a seat with frequent flyer miles. I find tickets for people to destinations all over the world every day. And as we've already talked about. It's not because I'm a super genius. So for those who are thinking, man, this guy sounds really smart, trust me, it's just the microphone. But it's because I know what miles are best, which airlines have the best availability, and when tickets are available. So those three things kind of form the main components here. As far as which miles are best, it is a little subjective, but United usually has very good availability. And that's because they are a member of the largest alliance, Star Alliance, and they have 28 partners. So if you're looking for a general rule of thumb, United has the best overall availability if you're not sure what destination you want and you're just getting miles for a trip in the future. United will give you the best chance of scoring a seat with your miles. And by far, Delta is the worst. In fact, I've never once earned a single Delta mile in my life. Just because they are so hard to redeem, I don't find it worth it. So if you're saying it's impossible to ever find a seat with frequent flyer miles with Delta frequent flyer miles, all right, then I would say this isn't such a myth. This is probably closer to fact. But if you're lumping all frequent flyer miles into that, that's where you're wrong. So make sure you're earning miles with airlines that are have good availability. United has good availability. AA, American Airlines, usually has pretty good availability as well. And like we said, Delta, nothing. Like, I don't even waste my time with Delta. So stop earning Delta miles if you are. The second part of finding availability is knowing which tools to use to search for availability. So you don't just go on the airline whose miles you have on their site and look for availability, because they might not show you all the availability for all the partners. So if you're looking for Star Alliance flights with Star Alliance partners, then you go on United's website to search. So this is a case of where you'll probably have United miles, you might have US Airways miles, but you're going to use United.com to search for availability because they'll show all the available partners. So you want to go to United.com if you're searching to look for flights with Star Alliance partners. If you're searching for Oneworld partners, you can go to American Airlines, but they're not going to show you all the partners. You want to go to Qantas.com, Qantas.com. You want to go to Qantas's website because that shows you all the partners for Oneworld. So if you search on Qantas and you find availability, you might find stuff that isn't showing up on AA.com. If you're using AA miles, you go to Qantas, you find availability, then you call American Airlines up with their flight numbers that you found on Qantas and say, hey, these are the flights that I need, and then you'll have to book it over the phone because it won't be available online. There are also some paid services you can use. Award Nexus is one of them, and Expert Flyer is another. So if you're really starting to dig deeper into this game, I would suggest checking out Award Nexus. You can get a free membership for a little while and tinker around with that. Same with Expert Flyer. They'll give you a free membership for, I believe, a week, and you can check it out and learn that. So if you do get more into it, you might want to start going to one of those paid services because they will just make it more convenient for you. And the third step for finding availability is knowing when to look. So 330 days out is when tickets start going on sale for that date. So if you're looking for tickets for September of next year, September 2014, you would want to start looking in October 2013. So 11 months out is when you can start booking tickets. And if it's peak time or it's a big event, for example, if you want to go to Europe in the summer, you want to start looking early because everyone wants to go to Europe in the summer. Kids are off school. Parents are taking their kids there. Parents are going without their kids there. Everyone's going to Europe in the summer. So you definitely, if you want to go to Europe in the summer, you want to start looking as early as possible. And you can start booking tickets up to 11 months out. For the World Cup, I mentioned getting tickets for $2.50 from JFK to Rio. Now, this is a huge event that many people want to go to. So exactly 330 days out from June 12th, 2014, which is the beginning day of the World Cup, I looked for tickets. I was on British Airways website because I use British Airways miles to book it. I was on their website in the morning. I booked the tickets by that night. Every ticket that was available was sold out. So, you know, in one day, they were gone. So if it's peak time or big event, start looking 330 days out. if you miss that window, you've got to keep checking back because they don't just release all of it at once. And then once it's gone, it's gone. They do bring award tickets back. So throughout this time, they're going to be bringing some tickets back. Not a huge chunk usually, but they'll be bringing some back. So you want to keep an eye out. You want to keep checking back. And if you have that paid thing that I told you about, Expert Flyer, you can set seat alerts, which will then send you an email or a text or whatever you want for when a seat becomes available on the flight that you want so that you can then book it right away. So you definitely want to keep checking back. If you do it manually, that's fine. But if you really want this ticket, maybe you should get Expert Flyer just for their seat alert function. But the earlier you look, the better. But I realize many of us, myself included, don't usually plan that far in advance. This World Cup thing was planned way far in advance. I don't usually travel that way. Two more tips if you don't plan 11 months in advance. About 6 weeks out, award availability begins to open up again. So at that point, a lot of the tickets that are paid tickets that they haven't sold, they will then put up for award availability because they know 6 weeks out, you know, most people who have wanted to buy their tickets have bought their tickets. So they'll open up more tickets about 6 weeks out for people to use frequent flyer miles on. So that's another time that you want to be cognizant of. You want to make sure you look 6 weeks out if you can and then see if there's award availability. The second tip with this is to look to fly on Tuesdays or Wednesdays because they are the least traveled days out of the week. So if you're flexible and you can leave on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, there's probably going to be more space available than if you're looking for a Friday or a Saturday or something like that. So myth number five, it's impossible to ever find a seat with your frequent flyer miles, unless you're talking about Delta, is...
Wrong, sir. Wrong.
Frequent flyer myth number six. All frequent flyer miles are the same. No, 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 no. This could not be more wrong, and I've already touched a little bit about this in telling you that it's almost impossible to find availability on Delta, whereas United, it's much, much easier. So that's a tiny example, but all frequent flyer miles are not the same at all. And this is a huge misconception that many people have, and kind of a sub misconception or sub myth about this is that people believe that you can combine frequent flyer miles between accounts. So someone will say, I have 50,000 American Airlines miles and I have 50,000 United miles. So that means I have 100,000 frequent flyer miles, which is true. They do have 100,000 total. But they think that with those 100,000, they can book trips with that 100,000. And that is incorrect. You cannot combine frequent flyer miles between airline accounts. So 50,000 American Airlines, 50,000 is in United. If you're flying on American Airlines, you need to have enough in your American Airlines account to fly the entire trip if you're flying with American Airlines. So you would need enough in there to book the trip. You cannot combine miles between accounts. Now, the other important thing to realize is that each airline is different. So all frequent flyer miles, I'm going to jam this into your head. Frequent flyer miles are not the same. Each airline is different, has different rules, ranging from if they allow one-way tickets, American does, US Airways doesn't, United does, British Airways does, Delta doesn't really. So if they allow one-way tickets, to how many miles they charge to go to a particular destination. So some airlines will charge 60,000 to go to Europe. But other airlines like American Airlines will charge 40,000 when it's off peak because they have a special deal for off peak award travel, whereas United doesn't. So they all have these different little caveats with how much they're charging to go to places. There's also more advanced things, like if they allow stopovers and open jaws, that means you being able to take two or three vacations for the price of one, which United does, American Airlines kind of does, US Airways does, you know, things like that. If they allow stopovers and open jaws, and if they charge a fuel surcharge, which we've already touched on a little bit. So British Airways charges a fuel surcharge on most of their flights, you know, to avoid them for certain flights, whereas United never does. So they're good to have overall. So airlines are very, very different, and the frequent flyer miles that they have are very, very different. The other part of this is that you also have to consider the fact that some points, like Chase points, aren't actually miles, but they can be transferred to a variety of partners. So some credit cards will earn you Chase points. And I love Chase points because I can earn them and then decide what I want to do with them later. For example, Chase can transfer to Southwest. So if there's a good Southwest ticket available for domestic travel, I could transfer to Southwest. Chase points also transfer to United. So if I want to travel internationally, we already talked about why United's a really good airline to have miles with, I can transfer my Chase points to United. If I need points for a hotel stay and I want to stay somewhere nice, Chase points can transfer to Hyatt. So earning these points, like Chase points or American Express points or Starwood Preferred Guest points, those are the three big ones that can then transfer to airlines and hotels when you need it. So those are a little different than frequent flyer miles as well. So you want to make sure you're understanding what you're earning and what they're good for. And to help you out, I'm going to rank my favorites from most favorite to least favorite in order here. And at some point, I'm actually probably going to do a post and maybe explain this out later. But I'd rank them like this. Number one for me are Chase Ultimate Rewards points, which can be earned through Chase credit cards like my favorite, the Chase Sapphire Preferred or the Chase Inc. Bold credit card for business spending and stuff like that. Again, they can transfer to partners like Hyatt, Southwest, United. A close second is going to be the Starwood Preferred Guest points. And these are actually points that you earn with Starwood hotels. But what makes them so valuable is the fact that not only can you use them at Starwood hotels at a pretty good ratio, but you can also transfer these to tons of airlines. And when you transfer them to airlines, if you transfer 20,000 at a time, you get a 5,000 point bonus. So Starwood transfers to American Airlines is probably one of the easiest way to get American Airlines miles. So if I have 20,000 Starwood Preferred Guest points, SPG points, you'll probably see, that transfers to American Airlines. So 20,000 will transfer 20,000 American Airlines points plus a 5,000 point mile bonus. So I would be looking at 20,000 SPG points to 25,000 American Airlines miles. So that's a really nice perk that SPG points give you. And the fact that you can transfer to American Airlines, which is a really great airline to use frequent flyer miles on, makes these very valuable. My third favorite type of miles and points is United miles. And we've already talked about this a little bit, so I'll just run through it. But United miles are awesome because they allow one-way tickets. They have very good availability usually. They allow stopovers and open jaws if you book round trip with them, which means you can get two or three vacations for the price of one. And they never charge a fuel surcharge on their tickets. So it's basically the gold standard in my mind of actual frequent flyer miles. And I love United miles. And you can rack up a ton of them because, like we said, Chase points transfer to United miles. So Chase points is a good way to earn a bunch of United miles as opposed to just getting a United miles credit card and earning miles that way, which you can also do. But you can get even more if you earn Chase points and then transfer as well. Number four on my list is American Airlines miles. American Airlines miles rarely have fuel surcharges on them, only if you travel on British Airways, which is a little bit of a pain, and that's why they're ranked under United miles, because you have to avoid British Airways and avoid the fuel surcharge. But they're very good for getting a lot of places. They also allow you to fly one way so that you don't have to always go round trip and stuff like that. And they have some really cool perks as well, like the off-peak award charts. You can go 40,000 miles round trip to Europe, which I'll be taking advantage of this coming spring and going to Paris with my wife. So they have some cool perks that United doesn't have. They're just under United miles. Number five is U.S. Airways miles, and U.S. Airways may end up merging with American Airlines. So if you're listening to this later in the future, this might not even be valid. But for right now, U.S. Airways miles are alive and well, and U.S. Airways miles are below United and below American Airlines. One of the reasons is because they don't allow you to travel one way. So you always have to have enough miles in your account to do a round trip ticket, and that can be very, very frustrating. However, they do allow stopovers and open jaws, so you can have multiple vacations for the price of one ticket. They also never have fuel surcharges attached to them, just like United. So that's really nice to know going ahead that you don't ever have to worry about what airline you're booking on. And they have some really cool things, too. They do have off-peak travel awards, but not as many as American Airlines. So U.S. Airways miles clocks in right under American Airlines miles. Number six is Southwest points. Southwest points I actually love, but the problem is that they can only be used on Southwest flights, and that limits your availability to domestic trips within the U.S. and actually a few AirTran flights that can get you like Mexico and the Caribbean, but you can't really fly anywhere else internationally with them, so that's why I rank them as lower. They're really good if you're only going to fly domestically, and if that's the case, you might want to bump them all the way up ahead of United miles or something like that. But overall, they're only good for flying within the U.S. and a little bit in Mexico, so that's why they're number six. Number seven is American Express points, and American Express points are decent, but they don't have transfer partners that are as good as Chase points. For example, American Express points will transfer to British Airways. They'll transfer to Delta. There's a few other transfer options like Air Canada and stuff like that. But as you know, we haven't mentioned British Airways miles yet or Delta miles. And that means that American Express points are going to clock in right above the next one, which is British Airways miles. So British Airways, they're called Avios points, are very, very good in a few specific instances for inter-Europe travel. They're very, very, or intra-Europe travel. They're very, very good. They don't charge a fuel surcharge, but the thing you want to watch with British Airways Avios points is that usually when you fly with them, you're getting hit with a fuel surcharge. So you have to take very specific trips, like from North America to South America. You could do that. North America to the Caribbean, things like that. You won't get hit with fuel surcharges, and they're very good in that case. But you can't go anywhere internationally, like to Europe or Asia, and not pay the fuel surcharge. And it can be debilitating. It can be, you know, $600, $700, $800 at some point, which is pretty ludicrous. And the last miles, in case you don't know what they are already, are Delta miles. I would urge everyone to stay away from Delta miles if you can, because they are very, very hard to redeem, which means all the other kind of cool stuff about their program, oh, they don't charge fuel surcharges if you start your flight in the U.S. and stuff like that, it doesn't really mean anything if you can't book award tickets with them. And Delta is very, very difficult to book award tickets with. So if you have them, I would urge you to try to use them. But if you don't have them, don't start earning Delta miles. You know, a lot of people think Delta miles must be good because they're a popular airline, this and that, but it's very, very difficult. So that is how I'd rank the points and miles. I'd go Chase, SPG points, United, American Airlines miles, US Airways miles, Southwest points, Amex points, British Airways Avios points, and lastly, Delta miles. So myth number six, all frequent flyer miles are the same, is
wrong, sir. Wrong.
So there you have it, guys. The six biggest frequent flyer myths, totally debunked. So if you're a veteran and you're always trying to convince people to start earning frequent flyer miles and start using them, use some of the information I gave you today to fight against this idea that frequent flyer miles are hard. Tell them 4 to 5 hours you can become somewhat of an expert. You could get a free trip in 4 to 5 hours of studying, again, quote unquote studying. Make sure people don't think that frequent flyer miles are all the same. Yay for United. Yeah! Boo for Delta. You know, take some of the information I gave you about finding availability so that you can use your frequent flyer miles. Make sure people understand all the ways that you can earn frequent flyer miles. It's not just through flying. We know it's through a myriad of ways, credit card science, online shopping, spending on your credit card, dining programs, everything like that. And of course, be very wary of the fuel surcharge. Frequent flyer miles cannot earn you a free ticket, but it can earn you a very cheap one if you know what you're doing. If you are a newbie, I hope you took all this to heart. Make sure you check out the blog as well, because it has tons of information there, including a start here page that takes you through what you should be learning as a beginner, then an intermediate, and then more advanced. So we'll walk you through step by step by step. If you do think frequent flyer miles are hard or confusing, we're going to debunk all those myths once again with written word. So extrapackofpeanuts.com. That's all I've got for you guys today. I hope you enjoyed this, and thanks for tuning in. Until next time, everyone, happy free travels. Yeah, well, you don't have to.